Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hello there, this is Foster Brown, and welcome to the Internet Advisor. I'm the co-host of the program, been here for about 16 years doing this, with Mr. Gary Baker, who is off this afternoon, but Ed Riddell and Kel Carson are here. We're going to talk about some of the big financial reports that came out, and the significance of those reports from this past week about Apple and Microsoft, and just all sorts of things, Amazon, Facebook, and we'll be talking about password managers, getting all of your passwords together and keeping them super secure. You want to stay tuned for that and much more. As always, it's my pleasure to introduce our crew to you who are here today. Gary Baker, as I mentioned, is off with his son at a tournament. Proud father watching his son.
Oh, my gosh.
Justin. Oh, my. And he is his son is a little guy, but he is incredible. He's like a Pavel Datsyuk out there on the lacrosse field, and he's doing very, very well. So Gary is out watching the game of that. And we have Mr. Ed Riddell, who, matter of fact, back from taking care of his...
Another proud father, yeah.
Another proud father. You were hauling your kids back from Grand Valley University.
Yeah, that was a blast. Yeah, I was able to get a hold of a Yukon, borrow that for a few days, loaded that thing up to the ceiling.
I know, I saw a picture of that on the Facebook.
Oh, my gosh.
And Kel Carson, you've done your fair of... You've done your business of trucking kids around, haven't you?
Yeah, I only have the one that I trucked, and that was enough trucking for me, I got to tell you. But Mom did most of the trucking than I did.
Well, I think a couple of weeks, I'm going to be going up, and these are my granddaughters now who are up at Central Michigan University, and they're moving from one dorm to another, and they want us to go up there to help them kind of set it up. So we'll be going up to help them participate in that. But thank God I don't have to haul the stuff that you guys had to haul around. Hey, talking about hauling around things, there is a case that came before the Supreme Court this week that was, I mean, it's been hauling luggage around for a long time and finally arrived. And I was fascinated to find that Aereo, which is this company, it's in Detroit, by the way, in the Detroit area. Matter of fact, I have an account there. They had these little tiny dime-sized antennas. You saw a picture of it, Cal. We're amazed how small they are. And you get like, there's an array of these things that they have someplace physically in the Detroit area, for instance.
Right.
And in this market, they pick up the local digital TV signals.
Right, the high def, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like a pair of very high definition rabbit ears that you rent from them. In addition to, they have a DVR that you get. You can record a certain number of those programs that are out there.
Yeah.
So it'd be like if you had this in your home and you're just getting what you get off the air.
Well, I mean, it's all recording. You cannot actually watch it live, can you?
Yes. Oh, yes.
All day long.
Yep. Really? I tried
and all
that.
Night too.
I tried that. I couldn't. Oh, well. When I tried my free 30-day, I just could not get it figured
part
out.
Part of it...
Oh, you know why? Because I had the Android version of it. And the Android version, I could not do live streaming.
Yeah, they had some
that
problems.
Would answer a lot of questions, wouldn't it?
It was beta. It was beta. It still is beta.
It is. But I have been able to watch. Matter of fact, we watched the Lions play on Thanksgiving Day. Mm-hmm. We were in Brighton at a camp where they're doing our family Thanksgiving thing out there. And I had to do a little fiddling because we were... technically outside the market area.
Why is Foster going to the bathroom so much?
Well, we got it. We finally got it through my laptop, hooked it up to one of the TVs out there, and the guys were able to watch the game.
Oh, you were? Okay.
I can tell you that, you know, ever since we switched over to the digital age with television, I've been less than impressed with getting an over-the-air signal, because for a while it's looking great and everything looks fine, it's high def, and then all of a sudden it checkerboards on you and just disappears.
Yeah,
and unless you spend a lot of money on a good rooftop antenna, you don't get a good signal.
Well, this is, I think, I think that's the point of aerial.
Well, and that was the point I was going to make. For the $8 a month, which I'd be willing to spend to get a clear, solid signal and DVR to boot along with it, I think it's a deal.
It is a deal.
I mean, I still get checkerboards with my Charter Communications, my cable company. I get more checkerboards than... And they're just like, I'm sorry, sir, we don't understand what's going on.
Well, you're out in the north of Metamora, far north of
Oakland County.
It should be, the cable company should not be delivering that. That is the point of Aereo, is that you get away from that, that checkerboarding.
Yes.
Exactly. That pixelating.
Oh, that's awesome.
And now, apparently they presented their arguments. Now, ABC was the one who took them on. And they said, good, if you're feeling, you're feeling hinky, let's get down on this. And so they went to the Supreme Court. Interesting, each side only gets 30 minutes to present their point.
Yeah.
No long, drawn-out arguments.
Well, you know, but both sides were able to present all the material to the Supreme Justices, and really that was just for show. I'm trying to keep up on this. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, a little bit, because, you know, I was reading some of the articles, and that was one of the points they made. The Supreme Court Justices has all the material, but they have 30 minutes to present their material.
Yeah, to see if they can make any other kind of compelling points in it. So the arguments have made, and I think the decision is going to come down sometime in mid to late May, that they'll finally, you know, the justices will give their decision on it.
And, of course, you know, the companies like ABC are going against them because, you know.
Well, they want to maintain this cash cow that they have. Well, of delivering material and having people pay to have it redelivered down the cable line, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, the big part about it that's torquing the networks is the fact that they collect royalties from the cable companies to broadcast their stuff. And if someone else can pick it up and use it and stuff like that, they don't want that.
Well, and they've kind of said, we're going to take our ball and bat and go home if we lose.
Right, and Aereo's basically taken the same standpoint that they did in the 70s, in which Betamax, or these television companies were going after the Betamax, having the ability to, and VCRs, record over-the-air broadcast. Right. And and basically, Aereo is using that argument, which has been upheld many times in the digital millennium.
And, you know, the bottom line is, these are public airwaves, guys. You are getting to make billions and trillions of dollars over the years off of using the public airwaves for pennies.
Yeah.
And you're complaining then somebody sticks an antenna up in the wind and catches this?
Yeah, I mean, think of all the people in Canada that are able to actually receive the satellite broadcast for free. Because they're able to purchase the and decrypt illegally, because anything that's in the air is free over in Canada.
Well, it's not illegal in Canada.
It is not illegal in
Canada. No, not in Canada. Well, we'll see. We'll wait and see. That'll be a big decision coming down. And just a minute, what we're going to do after this pause is we're going to come back and talk about some of the financial reports that came out this week, which are kind of significant in terms of what it says maybe about the future of Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Facebook. The statistics on Facebook are just kind of mind-blowing to see the number of people around the world who are using that service. It's coming up along with Password Keepers. You know, Gary and Eddie and Cal, I'm used to looking over this direction and seeing Gary sitting there. Ed is in the co-pilot seat today. It was interesting for me as I was kind of thinking in the preparation of the program. It's so good that we didn't call the program the Computer Advisor back in 1998, which would have been rather, you know, people were just getting into personal computers in many ways. Mm-hmm. And it was becoming a big thing, and then people were getting on the internet. But I just thought of that today, that if we had named it the Computer Advisors, we'd be out of luck, because that industry is shattered everywhere. The interesting thing is that the internet has actually become kind of the common denominator for all these different devices. There are many different kinds of devices that are getting onto the internet now, and it has become kind of the common highway in which all of these things flow together. So I just thought we were fortunate to have called the program the Internet Advisor to start with 16
years
ago.
I'm sure if we talk to Gary, he'll say, you know, well, that's where I was going with that. I knew that.
He knew that all along.
All along.
I just didn't.
Because him and Al Gore together
invented the internet,
of course.
He's not here to defend himself. Hey, folks, this segment of the program comes at the end of a week when there have been many of these important financial quarterly reports, and they're big because While often they don't determine what happens, we're in the silly thing where analysts have predicted where people ought to be. And if you do or don't make their predictions, that's the sign of progress,
okay,
which is kind of silly.
So now I'm going to stand up on my rant box for
do
about
that for a
minute.
Moment.
Okay.
Yep, yep.
All right. This is what drives me crazy about this whole thing. All right. Let's take, I don't know, let's take a company at random, Zenith TVs. And last year they sold 2 million TVs and they made $3 billion. And so then this year they sold 1 million TVs, but they made $1 million. Oh, they're slipping in the market. What? Come on. They still made a profit. Who cares? You know, it's just ridiculous.
Oh, and there's this whole business of trends, where things are going. And Cal, as a matter of fact, we'll start with you since you are our Apple expert here. One of the biggest ones that was flagged were when Apple made its report. First of all, the iPhones absolutely blew away the expectations. All the analysts were hunkering down saying that they were going to make a little over 38 million, or sell over 38 million iPhones. They went on 43.7, almost 7 million more in that period than they did in the same year ago last year.
That's a ton of phones.
Whee!
But, you know, phones are big. I mean, and me and Ed, we'll talk
well,
about
actually,
this at work.
Small.
In S case,
well,
they are
small.
Well, it
depends on if you're playing with those Galaxy things, those phablets. But me and Ed will talk about this at work. And you know what it comes down to be? It's not a phone. It really isn't a phone.
No.
Yes. It's a mini computer.
Yes, it is.
And if you took and you twisted all the numbers around nowadays, instead of looking at laptop numbers and how many are sold, and you start looking at phones or mini computers in that particular case, then you'd see where the real numbers are going. You know, they're just basically miniature computers.
You're touching on, I think, the second part of it, which was that and this is the one that got all the headlines, the iPads were down. They only sold 16.35 million iPads at God knows how many money, but the dollars were. They were down from 19.4 million. And I heard somebody saying, however, that if you look at the two quarters preceding, those had been up regularly over the ones beforehand. So this is kind of a natural sag that you have after having two strong quarters.
Yeah.
The point is still they sold 16.35 million iPads.
And they're still the leading tablet. Yeah. Out there at this particular time. And then the other thing is we're in this business of technology. And in technology, it's like every 6 months, what do you got new? What do you got new? What do you got new?
Well,
Apple is spaced a little further on coming out with another tablet. And so now it's like, something's wrong, something's wrong.
You will need something when we tell you you need something.
Yeah, pretty much.
We have to invent it first.
Now,
well, they're kind of caught on their own success.
Yeah, they've done very well.
Well, you can't stay on top forever.
And you know, they've had three market-changing things. They weren't the first in their fields. I'm thinking of the iPod that came out. There were other MP3 players beforehand. iPhone came out. There were other smartphones. A trio. From Palm, which I used, loved. And then the third thing would be the iPad. And there were other Slate, for instance. Microsoft had the Slate out ages before and never made anything go with it. But, boy, they just launched the perfect product in the market. So they defined those niches each time around. And the question becomes, so what's your next one? You know, they talk about the Apple TV and Apple phone. I mean, pardon me, an Apple Watch. Maybe. Who knows what the next one is? But there's always that thing about Apple now. After three of these earth-shattering things, they better come up with something else. And it's kind of interesting. Ed and I were talking about this before the program. The iPad drop, and combined with, if you look at the Microsoft numbers and everything else, where the Surface is increasing on Microsoft. They've increased 50% in their sales from last year. They're only up to like $500 million, in terms of sales on that particular product.
Right.
Although the Office 365 has done very well with Office 365 or the iPad now being available for the iOS devices. But what they're saying in there is that the niche that seems to be now opening up is this one's called the two-in-ones or the hybrids, where you've got, if you know, like the Surface that I use and that Shane uses and Gary uses, you can detach a tablet from a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And you can carry one around and then use the other one for
or even the Lenovo was the Yugo.
Oh, and that's exactly what the Lenovo ones. So you've got a lot of these ones out that flip around. They do all sorts of calisthenics. They're saying that Apple needs to look into that area. Do you think that that's the case?
I disagree completely. I don't think they need to look in that area at all. That is an area that someone has decided that they wanted to create. Fine. Do it and enjoy it and be very good at what you're doing. When you try to be everything, you end up being nothing well. And I think Apple, rather than go running down that route, they'll make a better iPad, they'll make a better MacBook Air, or whatever it is they're going to do. I don't think they're going to just try and go that direction, because I don't think there's, I haven't seen the growth there that you've seen with tablets.
Yeah.
You look at those flippable laptops,
yeah,
and look at the Microsoft Surface, mm-hmm, and the Surface is way beyond those flippables.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I know exactly. Yeah. One person has a flippable, and that's because I took them there to buy one because they wanted something like that really bad.
But the idea of having the detachable keyboard, I think, is really handy.
Is detachable keyboard really that big of a deal? How heavy is your keyboard on your tablet?
Oh, it's light. It's tiny. But we were thinking, for instance, in terms of the Apple, you already have the Air, and yes, you have the MacBook Pro.
Right.
Why not just, and it's kind of like you already have the iPad.
Yes.
Why not develop Apple's own magnetic keyboard that would go onto that, rather than handing it off to a third party, which they do now?
Why not just use the keyboard on the screen?
Because it takes up too much screen room.
Not when you're typing. Not if you can do any significant kind of typing. No.
Evidently, the typing portion has not been that big of a deal in iPads, because if you think about it, most consumers that use iPads aren't creators. They're consumers of media.
But still, the execs that I've seen, now this is just purely, you know, what I've seen in coffee shops and things like that, who have the iPads, have them docked into Logitech Bluetooth keyboard or one of the other keyboards there in order to be productive with
them. To extend the battery
life. So why shouldn't Apple step into that?
Because they don't need to. There's a third party out there that said, hey, we'll take this on. We'll make the money from it. We'll do it.
I just got a couple other quick things that's out there. Amazon. And by the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, we put the links to all of these reports if you're interested. Look, the interesting thing about Amazon is their revenue grew 23%. To $19 billion, almost $20 billion, from $16 billion in the year earlier quarter, and they beat the analyst projection by a little bit. But their profit fell 19% to $146 million. I mean, if you think that's tiny, $146 million. So Jeff Bezos really is giving away the business. He continues to give away the business in order, I think, to make his money off, I guess, Amazon in the end.
And you know,
How long they can keep on doing that.
And when I think of Amazon, I never think of them as being a technology company. I mean, with the exception of the Kindle, after that, they don't really do much in technology.
They're talking about a phone.
They just announced their Amazon Fire box
TV,
set.
That's right.
TV set.
Which is getting kind of reaction.
Seen it, been there, done that.
Yeah, kind of exactly as well. Well, there was one other to talk about Facebook, and maybe we'll get to that a little later on. What we're going to do, folks, though, is take a break now and get off our analyst chairs and talk about password managers. These are ways of keeping all of your passwords super secure with one single vault. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson in studio here. And by the way, our homepage, internetadvisor.net, is the place that we want you to go to get a wealth of information that we put together in the show notes. So it's there whether you get to it right now or at some other time. For instance, listening to our podcast where you've downloaded this and are listening to it, or you're on one of our affiliate stations listening to us there, you can simply go to internetadvisor.net. And on there, I've put a whole bunch of stuff. You'll see, for instance, all the quarterly reports that we've been talking about beforehand. But now we're going to be talking about password managers, the ABCs of password managers. And I have three links there. Two articles by Neil J. Rubenking, who was PC Magazine, Digital Magazine Online, is a noted expert in security, period. But he's got a couple of articles into the best password managers, and he reviews a bunch of them. Now, that's from 2011, and as we've looked at it, actually, the front runners haven't changed that much, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit. And then our own Mike Wendlin, and I say our own because he's from the Detroit area, good friend of ours from many, many years, and been on with us before. PC Mike is the name of his site, and many of you are subscribers to his PC magazines that come through, or rather they reports monthly, and he also reports for a national television network. And he's got some of the password managers he likes there and some good explanations. And then the last one is, again, the 2011 article, which is the 6 Great Password Managers by Neil Rubin King. So those resources are there. Now, guys, let's dive into, and Cal, maybe, or maybe Eddie, you want to take it up. What is a password manager, and what value do they have them?
Well, I mean, a password, basically, it's a place to store your usernames, passwords, and other fields that are commonly used for authentication, including username, or first name, last name, address, zip code, and that type of thing. The thing with all of these have in common is usually they require a single password to get access to a plethora, as Cal would say, of other passwords. I mean, when I look at my list of usernames and accounts, I must have over 30, 40 of them.
Oh, I'm up close to 100, I think, in terms of some of those sites that you don't use that often. You know,
yeah,
for instance,
Amazon, and you know, even your charter membership, and you know, your
Comcast, Bemeka,
everything,
exactly,
everything.
We have webmail, for instance, here at
and I do not use a password manager. As tempting as they are, I still remember in the late 90s people using them, and it was RoboForm, and he really liked it. But then he lost his USB chain, and he was panicking.
Okay, well, let's
his USB flash drive.
The concept behind a password manager, Cal, is, I guess, is that you have one very good secure password that in essence is like the master key to a vault, and then inside that vault you keep all of the usernames and passwords for all the rest of your sites that you're going to, whether it's Facebook or you know, cooking.com or whatever it may
all
be.
Your banking sites, your American
banking
Express
sites, everything, isn't it?
Your medical, your 401k.
Well, you can also include other information, like I know with RoboForm you can include all of your car information in there.
Yep.
You can include your social security number and other banking kind of information.
Yeah, I use 1Password. That's the password manager that I selected to use. And I like it because I like it for a number of reasons. Number one, if I want to, I can have the 1Master Password, and then I can tell 1Password, the application itself, to generate me a whopping strong password.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And generally, when you want a really strong password, it's going to be a line of gibberish.
Yep.
And it's hard to remember %, %771866, +, uppercase,
yep,
lowercase, that sort of thing. This will generate it for me.
Yep.
And it'll keep track of it for me, so I don't even have to know it. All I have to do is know the master password. Once I know that, everything else works in place. So if I want really, really, really strong encryption, this will manage it.
So you open up your password manager. You then go to a website.
Yes.
You then can create a password for that website.
Yes.
It will remember it then.
It'll do even better than that. I can go to that website, say change password, click the button on the password manager. It'll generate an ugly as heck password, send it to the website. The website says, fine, this is great. It's nice and strong. We like this. And then it'll keep track of it. And then from that point on, I don't even have to worry about what that website password is.
And some corporate sites and something like Microsoft will tell you every 90 days, they'll say, come on, change your password. And if you've been, you know, creating things, these things out of your head, it's like, oh, please, I'm having a terrible time. You don't have to worry about that anymore.
That's true. Well,
one click of the button and boom, it's done.
I figured out a way to make a rhythm so that if I have to do it manually, right, I can do that. But, you know, that's another program entirely.
Now, where does 1Password keep all that information?
It keeps it in your browser, encrypted, and it's stored there. And it also will keep it in a Dropbox location for you as well, encrypted as well.
So it's an add-on to your browser.
Yes.
Okay.
But the Dropbox one is one that interests me.
Oh, that's really good, because if you're using a mobile device or,
right,
and you want to get into other and be able to get, or using a laptop or using a tablet, and you want to be able to get into those same sites, but you want to have the passwords with you wherever, mm-hmm, you go to your Dropbox location, you can pull them from there.
Now, 1Password, I have to say, however, in my experience, I have been using RoboForm, and I'll talk about that in just a minute before. Based on your recommendations, I went to 1Password and just found it terribly complicated and not real responsive when I went to sites to load the information.
Uh-huh.
I found that it didn't do a good job, at least from my perspective, of showing me how to fill the information in.
Yeah.
And also how to remember information on a website. Now, that may have been just me. I just found that very difficult. All I got to say is I found that difficult. Coming from RoboForm, which in other ways is extremely effective in that fill-in kind of thing.
Yeah, I think with 1Password, you have to read a little bit more of the documentation to get a better understanding of it. Yep. I will say it's not as intuitive as
right.
I would have expected it to be. But, you know, once you learn how to do those things, they seem to work out
it's
okay.
The free, other thing Martin, that I, it's free, excuse me, it's free, isn't it? Or is it $12
a year? For 1Password?
Yeah.
I think it's like $39.95.
Oh, okay. I beg your pardon then.
Is it a one-time purchase?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
See, that's not bad.
That's not bad.
A lot of companies have gone to the yearly subscription.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as far as I know, it's a one-time purchase. I haven't had to, you know, pay any more for it yet. The other thing I like about 1Password is that it also gives you the ability to store all of your serial numbers for all your software that you buy.
Yes. Yeah.
That,
and
then that way, if you do a you do a reload of it, you can just retrieve them right out of there, and you get it right there.
All of the password managers that I've looked at least have that as well. In other words, it's not just the password to get into a site, but you also have like personal identity can be kept there, so that when you get to a page that says fill in your address and blah 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 blah, it just goes boom, done. And I want to move on to the RoboForm, because this RoboForm is kind of interesting. It's actually two parts. You have RoboForm everywhere, and that runs you $20 a year. Now, this can be kind of dicey, because it really works best when you have RoboForm desktop, and that is $30 one time, I believe, somewhere around that. So you have that on your desktop, and then that syncs up with RoboForm everywhere. And the RoboForm Everywhere can be installed on as many PCs as you want and as many devices as you have. And you've got a collection that will sync across all of them. The desktop handles the standard password management tasks, and it does a great job of filling in forms. I found that. Its one weakness is that it's limited to a single desktop. So just one desktop for that $30. Let me move on to this other one, which is LastPass. And again, you'll find these linked to in the articles that we've got on there as well. LastPass is free to start with and $12 a year for the upgrade. With the upgrade, it gives you multi-factor authentication, support for mobile phones and other platforms, and some really nice bonus applications. So $12 a year is not bad. But as you said, Ed, it's $12 a year versus that single price. So, you know, economics folks will fit into it. I would have to say that my experience using RoboForm, 1Password, and now I'm getting into using LastPass is get your hands on them with their free trials and get some sense of what's going on. For instance, LastPass did a really cool thing. It allowed me to import all of the passwords that Chrome, my Chrome browser, Google browser, which I use exclusively, had remembered. So there were close to 40 that I could just simply bring in from Chrome.
Now that's scary.
And they were loaded in there.
See, I never, ever have my browsers remember my passwords.
And maybe that's a warning. For people that do have their browsers remember passwords, maybe they're a candidate for a program like this.
Yep.
Because as Foster said, he purchased a program that basically went in there, recognized all these usernames and accounts and passwords for specific websites, grabbed them, and was able to actually decipher the passwords that were supposedly stored in Outlook. Don't you think that there's a piece of code from some malicious website that could do the same thing?
Yeah. And that is the danger that's often brought up about having your browser remember it. So my thought was, as Ed was coming over here, now that I got a piece of software that has broomed all those things off, maybe it's time to shut down that function on Chrome now that I've got them safely into LastPass. But one of the things you might look at, too, is use those things. Get out there, get your hands
get the free
on
trials,
them,
yeah.
And get the free trials, and see which one feels best for you and one works best for you, all right? So,
or please. You could do the Ed Riddell method, which is sticky notes and a fat wallet.
I'm running out of sticky notes. Hey, back in just a moment with Mike Brennan at My Tech News. Well, it's that time in our program for My Tech News with Mike Brennan. That's when we bring you the headlines that you can receive every week as a delivery. And these are just a few of the headlines of the many that you'll find that talk about what's going on in technology and business throughout the state of Michigan and the nation as well. And Mike Brennan, welcome. He's the editor. Good to have you on board with us.
Thanks, Foster. Always a pleasure.
And thank you, by the way, to the folks at ITA and New Horizons Computer Learning Centers that make this possible, along with ITC, the nation's largest independent electricity transmission company, and Warner, Norcross, and Judd, attorneys at law. Matter of fact, one of your headlines talked about one of the guys being recognized from that law firm. But let's dive right into a couple of one of the ones that caught my eye, Mike, was about the Detroit Symphony Orchestra hosting a different kind of meeting at the Max facility on April 21st to help get support from the community for the symphony. An interesting
right.
story.
There's a group called Assemble, which is sort of the Digerati of Detroit. They were the ones that tried to bring the X Games to Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
And so they brought in someone from Boston who has a lot of experience from the mayor's office there and something they call the New Urban Mechanics in Boston, talking about how technology innovation mm-hmm. helped build Boston and how the same thing can be done to help build Detroit up.
Sweet. That is neat to have that kind of coordination with other cities. Another story I saw out there was that a survey that 30% of the CIOs, the chief information officers at businesses throughout the state, say that the biggest challenge they have is managing remote workforce, kind of like herding cats.
Yeah, pretty much. For one that does this myself, it's really you got to be very disciplined because there's so many distractions working from home. But at the same time, this is the trend. Everybody, your mobile workforce, they want to work from home, or they want to cut back on their office expenses, or they say, all right, work from home, or whatever the case may be. But then the issue becomes, if you don't see them, how do you manage them? And that seems to be one of the big concerns.
Well, Mike, you were saying that I did. I have worked from home for many years before I got sick, and that was my base of operations. You do, I know. And Marissa Meyer, when she came into Yahoo, wanted to put a lot of the workforce out there in the field. And the problem is, how do you effectively manage that so you get the most out of that? Yeah, it is a challenge. I'm also seeing something that's kind of interesting, too, being developed in metropolitan Detroit, our suburban area, on Plymouth, Hella. Is a company that's developing a new charging system for electric vehicles that could be kind of revolutionary.
Yeah, this is a little different. Right now, in some cases, you can get wireless charging for small devices like cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to plug them in, all that jazz. Well, Hella wants to take that to the next step for electric vehicles, but there still has to be a lot of things done. After these special charging coils put in place, you could even put them in the roads. I mean, if you have a modern road, and so one of the things, one of the scenarios, they said you're stopped at the traffic light and you're getting a charge.
Yep.
Well, that has a few issues for me. I'm not sure how comfortable I would be.
Yeah.
So I think there's some
crosswalks will become a new adventure for people with pacemakers.
Well, it'll keep the streets thawed.
It would take heated seats to a whole other level, right?
But it's interesting that kind of cutting edge work is being done in the suburban area of Detroit here. That's neat. By the way, MI Tech News, a couple of these headlines we've heard about here are just some of the things that new things that are going on, inventions that are being going on, and companies that are getting into new processes and news from around the state as well. It's really kind of interesting. But Mike also helps people who are entrepreneurs like you out there, perhaps who have a little business, to get together with other entrepreneurs and to find sources of funding by telling you about places that are having meetings where you can network with the people who have the money to get your business going. So it's good for people who are just generally interested in news, but also people who are interested in finding out how to make their businesses work and work even better and find other people who are involved in the same kind of businesses. How do you get involved? It costs you not a penny. Simply go to internetadvisor.net and then scroll down the page to the place where you see Mike's smiling face and the MI Tech News Report. And then right below that, it says Keep Calm and click to subscribe. And then you can just hit that link in there. This is MI Tech Newsletter. And what it'll do is it'll take you off to a page where you can simply put in your name and your email address. And every Friday, you will get all of the headlines. And there's just quite a few of them. Mike, how many do you put out there roughly every week?
Well, my webmaster is always complaining it's too many. So, but typically 30, give or take.
Yeah.
So.
And what you see are headlines there that link off, so you don't have to read them all to get through it. But you can see a headline that catches your eye. Boom! You can click on that more, read more, and it'll take you off to a full article where you can find all the details. For instance, about that Detroit Symphony Orchestra article might be something that you'd find interesting. In any case, it costs you nothing, but you get a world of information available to you that you can delve yourself into and keep on top of what's going on in the world around you. And again, that costs you absolutely nothing. Just simply go to mitechnews.com here on the Internet Advisor page and click on that, and it's just a boom, you're there next weekend.
And we don't want to hide your light under a bushel.
Oh, that's
true.
We
have the Internet Advisor podcast
that's
channel.
Right.
And my partner and I, Jason Johnson, have taken over that for Foster and Gary and group there so that we can break it down into segments so you can zero
Absolutely.
In specifically on the one you want to listen to.
And what we're going to do, by the way, in just a moment after we finished talking about maybe the last headline here, was we're going to talk a little bit about that podcast channel in a little more detail for you folks out there, because it offers you a ton of resources, more than just the information and audio from our program, a whole lot more. But to wrap things up, Mike, I noticed that there one of the articles you had here was that a Michigan-based independent film has topped $10,000 on Kickstarter and their goal. And it's kind of cool. It's a Star Trek Horizon feature-length film.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they got the rights from Universal or whoever owns that, that he just didn't do that on his own. But a 22-year-old Albion College graduate put this whole project together. I'm not sure exactly how in-depth it is, but the thing is, he, over the Easter weekend, put up his campaign on Kickstarter,
Good
which,
grief.
Of course, is the crowdfunding campaign.
Right.
And in 32 hours raised $10,000, which apparently was enough so that he could do whatever the finishes on the film were something.
Getting some of it going. We know from having Dean Krauskopf, who is our gardening expert at WJR, our flagship station, his wife is putting together an independent film about lighthouse keepers. And it's going to be it's wonderful. And they started on Kickstarter as well. And the putting together a movie, especially one that has a fair number of, has a script to be written and all the rest of that, takes quite a bit of money. So I know that their Kickstarter fund program has been going on for a while. And $10,000, I think, is kind of it's an independent movie. Maybe he's able to do it at a much, much cheaper rate than other people who are out there. But in any case, good luck to him. Now, Mike, let's get back to our podcast channel, which folks are going to be finding out more about. As a matter of fact, last week we put a link up on our Facebook page about F7 Studios and that podcast channel. Let's talk a little bit more about that so that people can find out about getting over there and what are the other things that they'll find when they get to that podcast channel.
Well, right now we have Internet Advisor is the lead sort of partner there, right at the top. And again, what we've done is before Foster, you guys would produce the show end to end. So, the segments would be in there. You'd have to search for them to find them.
Right.
So instead now what we've done is broken each segment out because people have, I learned this from my days of doing streaming media, that people, they have specific things they want to hear. They don't want to hear the whole thing maybe necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can do that. And then we also have Richard Steenan, when he does some podcasting with us, he's up there. And then we take this show itself, this segment, and break it out for me for the MI Tech News podcast update. And then we're building on that at F7 Studios. What I want that to become is sort of an independent vehicle for folks like us, Foster, who are professional communicators who may or may not be as savvy with the social media stuff as they need to be. And with us, more, it's really Jason. I'm not the whiz kid here. It's Jason Johnson. But he takes over and makes it sound great.
And part of, by the way, folks, what we've envisioned doing with this, and this is something that's still going to be unfolding, is that we would also use this as a place to put bonus kind of interviews. For instance, our own Shane Hamlin is a real expert at gaming, and we're talking about working with him to put some things up there that would be focused on gaming that you might not hear during our program, but you'd be able to get there as well. So, Mike, thank you very much. We envision great things with that, and we'll let people keep on knowing about that. Take care, Mike. Good to have you with us. Stay tuned, folks. Coming up next, we're going to be helping to answer your questions.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor, and that's when these smarty pants in studio with me, Andrew Dell and Cal Carson, help to answer your questions. That's right, and the phone number to do that is 800-859-0957. We'll be taking your calls shortly. We also have a special report coming from Steve Heyer, direct from the World Championships of the first robotic competition that's going on in St. Louis, Missouri, where our Michigan Team Rush is working. So good to have you along with us. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program. Gary Baker is off this weekend. Eddie Rudell is in studio here along with Cal Carson. And for many years, those two characters have been the executive troubleshooters for, among other things, HP and now for GM executives. You guys help them with their problems. And you've been working for long years helping people with their computers, Ed. I know in systems.
Boy, well, you know, the everyday problem. You get a person that has a computer, and you introduce this new technology, yep. and they give me the one, two, threes, the ABCs of this unit. Yep. How do I use it? And that's really what you do.
And as executives too, they're not going to want to stop and take a whole computer course. Come on, help me get going.
Some are very technical in General Motors. I was very surprised. A lot more than HP, which was really surprising.
That is interesting, isn't it? At GM, you got the more computer.
Yeah,
side.
No one. Yeah, yeah.
And Cal, you work on both Apple and PCs, don't you?
Yeah, I use Apples, and I occasionally dabble in the dark arts, and it's amazing. But like Ed says, there is. Is a just a total range of different users that we have there with our customer base, and it's great to work with all of them. They're a lot of fun.
Are there many Apple products that come in?
We have a fairly good amount sprinkled among the executives, and then in addition to that, other parts of GM use Apple products extensively in the design area. They've been using Apple products for years because
I mean things like iPads. I'm talking about devices.
Well, you know, get this. Their mobile mail system supports the iPhone and still does not support the Windows mobile platform.
Oh, wow.
Put it that way.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And the servers are running. Are you ready? Microsoft Exchange. And so, you know, it's whatever. It's that whole bring your own device thing.
Well, we say
whatever you like, you use.
We say all of this to let you folks know out there when you're listening. That's the kind of people you're calling your questions into, have a world of experience and background. Again, the number 800-859-0957. I want to bring aboard somebody who has been reporting for us very proudly about the performance of our Michigan team, Team Rush, from the Clarkson area, along with a number of other teams. They won the state championship in Michigan. They are now competing in the first robotic world championship in St. Louis, Missouri. Steve Heyer, thanks for being with us on the show here. How are the kids doing?
The kids are doing great, Foster. We're fortunate enough to win the division championship here. We have our Hall of Fame award ceremony coming up. I've got team captain Cameron Razdar and Jennifer Ray here, and I'll turn you over to Cameron to give you an update from St. Louis here.
All right, very good. Hey, Cameron, give me an update. How did the competition go for you guys there?
It was really fantastic. The best competition we've ever had. At first, we were ranked third, mm-hmm. Which was great for our team. It's the first time that we've ever done that. Mm-hmm. And then we were able to pick our alliance, and we got into the finals, and we were really close to winning it. But it was nonetheless really exciting, and we're coming home as champions to Michigan.
Oh, and you say you came close to winning it. What was it that you came close to winning?
We came close to winning the division. There's four divisions and championships. Each has 100 teams. So we were one of eight teams in the finals of our division competing to get onto the field called Einstein, where all the divisions meet up, all the mm-hmm. winners of the divisions meet up mm-hmm. and play.
So who were you facing? What was some of your competition?
There was a team from New Hampshire, a team from Arkansas, but it was really close match. It was really some great teams there.
I gotcha. So who was your toughest competition?
Our toughest competition, I think, is some of the Michigan teams. They're really great teams. There's one Michigan team on the other alliance, and Michigan's always known for their great great teams.
Excellent, excellent. So, hey, go ahead.
Yeah.
So have you figured out what you have to do to go back next year in order to take them down?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I want to turn it over to my co-captain, Jennifer Ray, really quick.
All right, Jennifer. Yes, could you answer Cal's question, which was, what do you got to do to take it all next year, Jennifer?
Well, we're really planning to go even further with our robot and make sure that we improve from this year. And also, Cameron might have been too modest to add, but he also is a winner of the Dean's List Award, which means that he was a student picked on our team that best exemplified first and what students on the first really do.
Wow.
And this is really competitive. 2,000 students applied. There was 130 finalists, and he was one of 10 to win this award.
And, oh, he was one of 10 to win the award. Well, congratulations again to Kevin Razdar. Now, Jennifer, you're no slouch either. Tell me, the team. What did the team finally win? There were four divisions, right? And you guys, in your particular division, what position did you win there?
We were third alliance captain, and we won the finalist award, which means that in the end, we ended up competing. We did three matches against the team that ended up winning from our division. They will go on to Einstein.
We're really
proud of our award.
So you're like the runner-up in terms of the division?
Yes, and we're still competing for the Chairman's Award, which is the most prestigious award. We're waiting to hear from that.
Ooh, now what will it take for you guys to take the Chairman's Award?
The Chairman's Award is for the team that's the role model team in FIRST and really exemplifies all that FIRST does. We're spreading the message of science, technology, engineering, and math.
Wow.
It really the community involved.
Wow, that's excellent. And already Cameron has won that recognition for his individual effort. We got to only hope that you guys as a team can walk away with that as well. And you came very close. So what will the final winner of this whole shooting match, they're in the Einstein competition, right?
Yep.
So what are the teams in the Einstein competition right now?
There is a couple teams that we know from our area. There's some teams from California, there's some teams from Canada, Michigan, there's teams from all over.
Okay, so it's still possible that the Michigan team could come up with the whole thing, huh?
Yeah.
Jennifer, thank you very much for your work. We're going to see you guys next week in our studio, okay?
Okay.
Give a regard
thank
to Cameron.
So
thank you so much. Great job out there, Team Rush. And Steve Heyer, thank you for all the work that you've done with those kids. Hey, back in just a minute, we'll start taking your calls here and get you some help on the Internet Advisor. I would like to take a moment to salute the folks behind the glass. And that's Shannon, who is with us right now, our engineer, and Ken Tucker, KT. They've been doing a great job along with Rich Wozinski. You may have noticed this afternoon, those of you who are listening to us on our flagship station, WJR, that there was a wild time here because of a special sports program that came on. It shifted all of our programs around. So those of you who tuned in right now expecting to get a chance to call in with your questions, now is the time to do it. And if you've gone to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, you've seen there that the statement of the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. So here's the phone number. It's toll-free, and our lines are wide open because of the screw-up this afternoon. I shouldn't say that. Because of the shifting in program times this afternoon, some people may have tuned in and said, oh, well, they're not on the air. We are. And we're here to answer your questions until 6 o'clock, though. So it's important, if you've got a question about your computer, about the Internet, whatever you'd like to do, give us a call at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. And guys, I think what we'll do to start this off, we had an email that came in this past week. Matter of fact, it came into our Facebook page. And some of you may not be aware, we have a Facebook page for the Internet Advisor. And people will pose questions there sometimes or make comments. And we also have a forum now at the Internet Advisor that's up and running that you can get into 24/7. Simply go to the internetadvisor.net site and go onto the forum and do that. But this is the question. It came from Chris Parham. He says, okay, Internet Advisor, a huge mass of folks are now setting up new machines. Realizing simple plug and play is old school. So, you've got your new PC virus package wireless router. Wait, time to ask the Internet Advisors. What are the best practices for setups to access current Internet environment safely when you're setting up a new computer? My personal preference, he says, is to include DuckDuckGo. I'm not familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And Ghostery, but Opera is being a tad slow. All right, put that aside. So, guys, what are the advice?
No idea what he just talked about.
I don't
duck,
either.
DuckDuckGo. I mean,
you know what that is, Cal? DuckDuckGo?
I have heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't either. So I guess the basic thing is, when you're setting up a computer, what advice can we give to people?
Well, you know,
we're being, for instance, moved into Windows 8, and they went out and they got a brand new machine.
Okay, because of the antivirus, I still like Microsoft antiviruses software. And if you want, I really like the Malwarebytes $25 lifetime fee.
Okay, that's okay. Their active package.
I actually downloaded it again on another computer I was working on, and And you get a free one-month trial. And it was the first time I've used this computer. And I was surprised at what would it would pop up, and it stopped. You know, those little pop-ups in the background for CNN. Right. This site is trying to grab this credential. Are you sure you wish to do it? Right. This other one's trying to push a toolbar.
Wow, they put a lot in there.
I was amazed at
So malware bites in the past we used to suggest to people as a malware hunter, okay, not as an antivirus program.
Right.
Now with their new package, what they call their professional
package. It monitors everything coming in and out. Even
it's actively
before,
monitoring.
Yes, and even before Microsoft says, hey, there's this malicious program that wants to install, Malwarebytes stopped it in its track even beforehand on a Windows 8 machine. I was very impressed.
Now, Windows 8, folks, we should tell you, has baked in a lot of what we used to suggest you do, which was go to Microsoft Security Essentials,
right.
Download that. That's free. With Windows 7, that's still the best package for an active protection.
You know, I just had to find out. You know what DuckDuckGo is?
No.
It's a search engine, but it's a search engine that does not track you.
Okay, okay. So this is, Chris Parham is somebody who wants to be fairly anonymous, and that's certainly a good idea.
Yeah.
But basically what we're telling people is...
And you can also do anonymous browsing as well. You can open up Internet Explorer and Chrome and start them up as anonymous browsers.
Right, exactly. So basically, if you're moving into a Windows 8 machine, now 8.1 with the update, and by the way, it's important to get that update, folks. That's no longer optional. Matter of fact, I won't go into it right now, but I was listening to some commentary this week that said, if you don't have the 8.1 update, you don't get updates from this point on for Windows 8.
No, I
in other words, there's some security aspects of it you got to get to. I'm going to try to find out more information.
Yeah, let's
about
find out
that.
More because that doesn't make sense because it is not it's not a mandatory download.
No, but apparently if you want to get all the goodness that they've got, they want you to go to 8.1 update. There was something in there
that's
extremely
possible.
Important for security. But anyway, and it, by the way, folks, it's not a big deal. It's a very easy load, and it takes care of a lot of problems. Metric gives you a lot of new bells and whistles.
What I did is I went to update.microsoft.com, and it did it. And then it was also available. It brought up the Microsoft Store, which I then downloaded and installed it on my standard Windows 8 laptop.
So basic thing we're saying here right now, a package we found that looks like a pretty simple kind of thing is to go, if you've got a brand new computer, if you've got a Windows 8 computer, then you're going to be getting make sure you got the Windows 8.1 update.
Right.
And then after that, after you get everything updated, Malwarebytes Pro is looking pretty good. $25 a year?
25 lifetime.
Lifetime. Ooh.
And when you go to the store, they're going to try to sell you Norton or McAfee or Kapersky or whatever. And a lot of them are...
Or it'll be pre-installed. Like it's
pre-installed,
a Dell or something like that.
And a lot of people is like, I've been re-upping my Norton 360 for the last 4 years. And I'm like, that's $50. You know, get Microsoft, its own home-baked antivirus software and Malwarebytes. And the
Microsoft software is called Windows Defender. It's baked in now. They don't leave that as an option anymore.
And you also have to remember, for most people, if they're subscribing to a cable subscriber or to someone like AT&T, they get their own Windows, their antivirus software absolutely free from them as well if they want to go with the commercial route.
Yes, and that usually happens to be McAfee, often a Norton kind of
product. It's either McAfee or Norton in most cases.
But in those cases, I would forego those and stay with the Microsoft.
That would be our advice,
because it's
folks.
It's free as well, and it's better.
It's baked in, and the Malwarebytes then.
Well, in my
if you're
going
to add on
better.
To it, yes. And from our experience, and Cal, maybe we got a caller here. I want to get to Joan from Clarkston, but we can talk about Apple and what you do with a new Apple machine when you get it. Because
turn it on and enjoy it.
Okay, so Foster, what's the phone number for our other callers?
Okay, 800-859-0957. That's our toll-free number. Give us a call right now, and you can join Joan from Clarkston. Hi, Joan. Thanks for calling us, and how can we help you here on the Internet Advisor? Joanne. Hi, Joanne.
Hello.
Yes, hi, hon. How can we help you?
I'm working with Outlook and distribution lists, and what I've noticed, and I checked it out on the Internet, and I can't get a good answer. When I update an email on the distribution list, it doesn't show up. It sends to the right address, but it doesn't show up on the listing that you would see on your computer or you would print out.
So you're saying is this a corporate environment or a home environment?
It's a home environment, but it still doesn't. Okay. Yeah, it's a home environment.
Okay, so and you've created a distribution list, and you called the distribution list, bowling club or, you know, Tuesday night or something like that.
Yeah,
And you're saying that when you print out the email that it's coming up, the two lines says bowling club and not all the individual people on the list?
No, I see it's we'll just say school personnel. I see all the people, and I see their emails, but when I've changed their emails, you know, I've gone in and I've changed it because maybe I mistyped it or something.
Right, right.
It changes to the correct, when I send it out, it goes to the correct address.
Right, so the list is actually properly, the list itself is updated properly.
Right, but okay. It's the front sheet when you say, school personnel and you're Ms. Smith, it shows the wrong email.
That could be, okay, so in the contacts, how are you adding the people in the distribution list? Do you have them as individual contacts within Outlook or people, depending on the version? In Office 2013, they're called people. They don't call them contacts anymore. I hate when they do that, Microsoft. So, and
it's 2010. I've got 2010.
Okay, so they're called contacts.
They're still called contacts.
So they're still called contacts. So are you updating the individual contacts, or are you actually in the distribution list and modifying the email address in the distribution list?
I'm modifying in the distribution list.
Okay. Do you have the well, hold on the line. We'll get back with you after this call.
Okay. We're going to take a little break. Mm-hmm. We'll come back with you and see if we can solve some of these things and give you an answer back on the air. Okay. Our phone number again is toll free 800-859-0957. And we have another half an hour to take your calls. Back with Joanne. Hey, thank you so much. By the way, InternetAdvisor.net is the place to go. That's where you'll find our podcast on Sunday night. We post them there. And by the way, you'll find information about our new podcast channel, which is even kind of better because you can take, rather than the full, it's about an hour and 15 minutes is the when you take out all the breaks and put the podcast together. Sometimes that's a lot to listen to. You can go to InternetAdvisor.net, the homepage there, or to the podcast channel and find the individual elements that you can listen to, like talking about the password managers or talking about the results from the financial results from this quarter, or Steve Heyer and the folks, or Mike Brennan, or some of these answers that we're giving right now.
Okay? A lot to listen to. I listen to it like 6 or 7 times in a row before the weekend's out.
I live it.
Speaking of living it, let's get back to, Cal has an important announcement to make about a meeting tomorrow, but I want to get back to Joanne. Joanne, thanks for waiting there patiently. We've done some thinking in the meantime about your concern, which was you have a distribution list in Outlook, and when you change an individual address in the distribution list is where you do the changing, it does make the change. In other words, so that email does get to that person in the new address in the distribution list, right?
That's correct.
Okay, but when you look at the email itself, the address that you see there is the old one, right?
No, when I look at the distribution list,
I meant that, pardon me.
So when you look at the distribution list in the email, it has their old information listed.
Right?
No, it's when I print out the distribution list and I want to
check. It's only when you print. That is so strange. Mm. You're running across an oddball issue. So the only two things I could think of, and one is you mentioned that you're actually adding individuals within the distribution list that, and they may not actually be contacts. Microsoft's distribution list is meant to be, you create a bunch of contacts of individuals, and you can even associate photos of the individuals in there, in the contact, and then you create a distribution list of from your contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, or you can add a new contact to your distribution list.
Correct. Okay, so as long as you're doing that, I just want to make sure it is showing up in your original contacts.
Now,
modified.
What's the problem then? I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I need you to confirm that the contact, the original contact, is being modified, and that you're not modifying it only within the distribution list. That's where I'm going.
I don't know about that.
So you want to go back into the original contacts and see if the people are modified in there.
Right.
See, I never modify, and maybe this is a discipline that I've developed over time, and you could call it a habit now, because I knew that Microsoft had problems way back when, where you get these problems when you go back and forth. You modify the contact, and then you only manipulate them in distribution lists. You don't edit them in distribution lists.
Ah, okay. That's the issue, apparently, Joanne.
Okay, the other thing you can do, have you ever noticed in Microsoft, in the to line or the CC line, that when you start typing a person's name, it starts pre-filling their name. It like a little box shows up.
Yeah.
Okay. When you do that to a person, you may notice that if you're typing in Ed Rudell as an example. You'll see my Ed Rudell old email address, Ed Rudell new email address, and there'll be an X next to that person. You can actually delete that buffered, if you will, or cached or remembered. Microsoft, it's what's the term they use for that? It's the it's a convenience
type ahead, if you will,
for the email address. You have the ability in the to line to delete those old email entries. I would recommend deleting those as well there.
Yeah. Now the other thing we were suggesting too is that when you send out a list like that, the distribution list, that you probably be best if you can posting it in the BCC column. What I've often done, the habit I've had is when I have a list of people that I'm sending things to, I put all those addresses in the BCC area, and then I put my own address in the to address.
Correct. You put the distribution list in the blind carbon copy.
Right. And the reason for that, Joanne, is that anyone who gets that email can harvest all those other email addresses.
Or if that person gets a virus,
Somebody else can harvest. All those email addresses that are on the distribution list.
Because they're not in blind carbon copy. If they're in the to or the CC, and that, someone in that distribution list receives a virus, then...
Then basically,
anyone that's on that receives that email is going to be spammed.
Yeah.
Typically what's done, unless there's reasons not to, you always send large distribution list in blind carbon copy.
Okay. Do you understand the logic of that?
Yes, I do that. I have a question where I see someone will say undisclosed. How does that work?
Undisclosed?
Yeah, it will be in the two or the CC, and it will say undisclosed, and that's all you see, and you don't see the other... You don't see the name.
Well, they found a way of masking it. I'm not exactly sure. How do you mask that with...
Well, are you talking about only on your computer?
Well, yes. On my I mean, when I receive one,
yes.
It's undisclosed.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying.
First of all, I'd be concerned if I received one that said undisclosed. I would not open it.
Well, maybe they're paying for a service for anonymous email subscriptions.
I would check that out.
I'm not sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Joanne, thank you. You've raised a number of things there that hopefully are helpful to other people as well. Okay, hey, again, folks, here's the number. We've been cut short a little bit, so I want to make sure you get your chance to get your question in, and we have lines open and plenty of time right now until the top of the hour, 800-859-0957. Larry from Wayne, welcome to the Internet Advisor. What can we do to help you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
15 years ago, I took the paid AOL, and some 7 years ago, I chose to decline the paid and took the free.
Right.
Recently, my email account has been spammed, and I'm getting complaints from people that they're getting porn or whatever, and they're telling me I need to do something. I went into my email account to change the password.
Mm-hmm.
They acknowledge my account,
mm-hmm.
email address. They do not. My security question has been changed, as has my account holder's name.
Wow! They got in and they did a number on you. They got in and completely changed the identity.
Whenever I call AOL, they want me to pay to go into my and fix it.
Yeah.
Options at this point.
How
and that's what Microsoft or that's what AOL basically says on their website is change your password and then please contact us if you are unable to change your password and that's really their only option at that point.
Yeah. Do you have any of that information anywhere else?
Well, it's not that he's lost it; it's all been changed.
Well, but I mean, if he's got it anywhere else, I would just. What does he do to get rid of it, though? Wow.
Get rid of what?
These people who are essentially going after that mailing list now. I mean, he could open up another free account somewhere and send email out through that, but what does he do with this hacked account now?
Nothing. AOL's going to have to deactivate it for suspicious activity on their own. I mean, that's really all they can do.
But what they're saying, it sounds like, is, am I right, Larry? They're telling you got to pay to have that done.
No, they have to pay to change his password so they can get back access to continue working with him. That's what it sounds like.
Yes, they want me to pay to fix their mistake.
How much do they want?
We haven't got down to the bottom line. It's just that I'm not
I don't understand the logic.
Do you need the do you need the account anymore?
Not really. I would like to take and pull out some of the addresses.
Sure. That's part of what I was asking about before.
Well, so you have one of two choices. You can either pay them the price, whatever they want, to fix it so you can extract those addresses from it, or you can send them a letter, return receipt requested, and say, please deactivate this account. I no longer want to be associated with it. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah. That's it. Or you can always put it on the charge on Visa, and if they don't meet your requirements and on getting you access, you can always have the have Visa withdraw that payment from AOL within 30 days.
You mean put it in dispute?
Or put it in dispute. Thank you, Cal.
The problem is that though he requested, he wanted to get rid of it. And
no, he's requesting that he get service and access to his account to work with them. And if they don't meet those requirements, couldn't he dispute it?
Depends on the terms of the service, and now you're getting into a bunch of crazy areas where it will probably take more time and more money than it's probably
worth. $9.95 it's worth or whatever.
Because they're not going to charge them probably more than maybe $25.
I was thinking $25 as well. Larry, is it despicable?
I don't think so. I mean, I would think for something like this, I mean, you would be surprised how many times. Well, I mean, those internet people are charging $125 to rid your computer of viruses, and they're the virus.
Yeah, exactly. And in some ways, AOL is the one that has the control over this, finally. I mean, obviously, somebody went in and changed everything, and the security questions, everything. They hacked it completely.
Yes.
And so AOL is the only one that can fix it from the back end. Yep. And in essence, they're holding the account hostage and saying, you got to pay me X number of dollars, which I think stinks. But you may have, that may be your only recourse, unless we get another caller out there who knows a way around this. And we will leave our phone lines open to help Larry out with that as well, okay? Thanks, Larry, for calling. We'll see if we can get more help for you, all right?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. 800-859-0957. If you can help us solve Larry's problem with AOL, as well as if you've got a question for us, we get another 15 minutes before we wrap up. Give us a call. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Internet Advisor. It's been a little truncated for some of you who are listening to this. By the way, we have still room enough for another couple calls, and I want to make sure that you're not put off by this broken field that we've been running through here. Excuse the football metaphor. 800-859-0957. That's toll-free. We do have room for your call in here. Now, Ed, you were following up on a story about AOL.
Well, yeah, Larry called.
Larry called with his problem. Apparently, he's not alone.
He's not alone. Apparently, allegedly, 1% of AOL's free and paid subscribers had their email systems IDs hacked and passwords hacked, and AOL has been sending out billions of spam mail messages going to websites for selling medications and stuff like that. So, I mean, after this was revealed 24 hours later, basically AOL took the dramatic change of changing their DMARC policy to combat mass emailings coming from AOL. Mm-hmm. Well, what that means is that they've taken care of the email spams going out. They ain't doing nothing for their customers as far as correcting or getting back into the mail systems. Just like Larry said, free users, you're not going to be able to get back in the mail system. And their paid users, all they're doing is saying that you should really choose better passwords.
Oh, my God. Well, it sounds like a very poor response on the part of AOL.
And make sure that
apparently.
But basically, with any email system, and it's probably time I did this with mine as well, so this is good for myself as well as for listeners. Go to your email systems. Go to the security sections. If you're using Hotmail or Outlook.com, Gmail, Yahoo, AOL. God forbid you still use AOL. I still can't get Grandpa on it. He loves it.
I know.
Cannot get him off of it.
Yes, a lot of our older listeners started there, and they will not
leave. I love the look of them blue icons. It just kind of makes me happy every time I click them.
I cannot get them. But, it's just that's what they're comfortable with.
Yep.
Anyways, and it's time to review, making sure that I can go out there, and if they have security questions, answer my 5 security questions.
Yes.
Maybe change my password again. Yep. Change something else, but something a little more complicated.
And we talked about password managers earlier on. This would be a good time to go. I like that, Ed. And folks, all of us should do this. Even if a free account, whatever your account is, go out there and check the security settings on it.
Or even better yet, if you got an account out there, and I think the caller did say it, it's an account you don't use. If you're not going to be using that account, go out there, clear the address book so there's no addresses hanging into it. If you can get in contact with them and tell them to shut it down, shut it down. But just make it as dead as possible so no one can do anything.
You know, I should probably do that with my Yahoo Mail. You're right.
There are accounts I have, too, that I just have not gone back to any kind of figure, who cares? Well, the problem is, if there's any remnants of addresses on those suckers, they could be hacked, and suddenly those people getting spammed, even though you've never gone back to it for 15 years.
Exactly.
AOL could be that long.
That doggone Foster, he's spamming me again.
And that's exactly it. No, you're right.
I haven't heard from him in 5 years. And
here he is sending me, you know, something growth, whisker
hormones.
Growth. Yes, hormone growth.
Yes,
now, hey, Kel, there are some things coming up this weekend in the Mac field that I'd like you to talk about, and a very important update for people who have iPhones, iOS devices.
Well, let's talk about that first. The iOS devices, there was a release of iOS 7.11, I should say. I added too many ones to that. It's an update to the iOS system for both iPhones and iPads. And these are those devices that are made by Apple that need to be updated. Not so much a security thing, but there are some security fixes buried deep into it. But mostly it helps to enhance the operation of it, especially with the typing on the device and the Bluetooth devices. So you definitely want to go ahead and do
that. And I also saw for the iPhone 5S, it helped some problems that were arising with the fingerprint reader.
Oh, right? It made that fingerprint recognition work so much better.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's important.
My big old wampum thumb, you know, it gets calluses and stuff on it, and it was having a hard time reading it. But after I did that update, it reads it so much better. Not flawlessly, but a heck of a lot
better.
But,
you know, I think it's probably one of the most important ones, because I see that as the thing that Apple introduced with that. There's going to be a really, really important biometric thing in the future for a lot of things.
Now, I have to ask you.
Yes.
When we worked for HP, that there were the rumor, you know, HP had those thumb swipes or finger swipes on their laptops.
Yes, right.
But the one simple thing is it only worked for 50% of the population. It only worked for men. And women that wore hand lotion, you could not use it. Or that was how the rumor says. When I spoke to several techs, they said, now, I had to ask, do you know if the biometrics reader is also susceptible to hand oils or lotions?
Well, unlike the ones that are on the HP devices that were and Toshiba's that were swipeable, you actually
they were like a little groove that you rubbed.
On this one, you actually lay your finger upon it. You don't really rub it across it, and it kind of looks at your finger.
And you have to rock it back and forth, don't you? Like 5 points or something like that.
When you do the first initial programming of it, you do that sort of thing. But after that, it's just basically you put your finger on top of it and just let it lay there for a second or two, and after a while it goes, hey, I'm all done.
I guess my point is, in response to what Ed was saying, Eddie, is it sounds like, I remember those things, they were like a little slit that you ran your finger over them, all right?
Yes.
And in this particular case, it's not just that narrow little band, which could fill up with the reservoir, but it could become a reservoir that would hold that cream in it, and I think
skin oils is what they said, changed the inductance, because that was actually an inductive reader.
Well, this new one they've got out now, as you were saying, Cal, you have to take your time when you're doing it initially.
Yeah.
I think it's like five different or a bunch of different positions that you'd go from the right and the left. And you do all your fingers, Cal?
No. I mean, you can do as many fingers, I guess, as many fingers as you
have. But you don't want to know which finger he uses.
I just did my thumb and my index finger, and that was enough for me. But I'm sure you can do other fingers if you like.
Yeah. But you have to take some time with it, as I understand.
A couple of minutes for you to go through it. I mean, and once it's done, it works.
Well, that's a very important update. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that's good, because for them to release something buggy and then, you know, they needed to fix that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's necessarily even buggy, but it's kind of the thing where you put it out, and then as you're using something as delicate as this, you begin to discover some things as you go on. You could stay in the lab until it's forever done. But the problem is now,
get it out.
The pressure is now on all of these producers because of, you know, so many of the competitors being out there. You got to keep up now. Microsoft is facing this with Windows 8. Mm-hmm. Then you had Windows 8, then Windows 8.1, then the Windows 8.1 update, and all of them critical. You got to have all of them down. And they couldn't wait until they had it all together.
It's a crazy world. It is crazy. You have to stay on top of things all the time, or else people are going to be all over you, and they're going to go flocking toward the next big thing.
Well, and there are so many competitors. I heard, this is fascinating, I was listening to a MacBreak Weekly was one of the podcasts that I listened to during the week, and Leo Laporte and his whole system, and Rene, and I forget his last name, from iMore, he's up in Montreal, was saying that Samsung has, in their displays, everything from, what are the smallest Samsung device would be? I'm going to guess 3-some-odd inches, or maybe 4-some-odd inches. All the way up to their biggest device, every quarter inch, they have a different screen size.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't it incredible?
Yeah, their TVs are 90-inch, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so they can go even further, like, yes, yeah. And that. But, I mean, in terms of the phones, it was. He said there's only 1 inch between the lowest and the 7-incher, I think, in terms of the phones, that is left unclaimed. Every quarter inch has a screen size that fits. And so that's the process. That's the competition you have, that they're developing these kind of things that are slicing the market into these tiny niches, and you've got to be able to feed those markets.
Yeah, and it's just what the public demands. You got to do it.
Well, I mean, it makes sense for Samsung as one of the people to do that, because they manufacture, I couldn't even guess the percentage of all of the LCD panels for all the manufacturers.
Hey, Cal, quickly, you have a Mac Group meeting coming up this weekend?
Yeah, it'll be tomorrow. That'd be Sunday, April 27th. It starts at 3 p.m. It's at the Birmingham Temple. If you go to macgroup.org, you can get all your directions right there. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about how to watch TV on your Mac or your iOS devices, and also we'll have the special guests in from Code 42. These are the folks who deal with a cloud backup program called Crash Plan.
Oh, I want to find out about that. I'm planning on being at the meeting tomorrow.
You
want to find
out
about
there.
Crash
it's
Plan
a good place.
And watching TV on
It'll
my Mac
great.
Devices. Folks, thank you so much for being with us for this program today. Sunday night, we'll post the podcast. And don't forget to check out our podcast channel as well for more information there. Go to internetadvisor.net in our show notes. You'll find information on it there and in the news notes. Shannon, thank you very much. Ken Tucker, thank you. And for the rest of you, thanks for being with us.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.